Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
HD Smartcast. You are listening to a Radio 1 production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
This is Minding My Business, the CEO story with Ramesh Menon and Rishi K.
Hello, I bet all of you have binged to your heart and stomach's content through Diwali and have settled into some kind of post-festival detox routine till the next festival comes up, that is. Welcome to episode 6 of Minding My Business, the CEO story. And it comes to you on 94.3 Radio 1 on FM radio and in podcast form on HD Smartcast and leading streaming services. This is a Radio 1 production. I'm radio and podcast host Rishi K. Let me welcome my co-host Ramesh Menon, the CEO of Fever Network and Radio 1. Hey Ramesh, how are you? Back to your yoga routine after all the festival indulgence.
Absolutely, Rishi. I've got to, you know, keep up with all the fit people in the organization and be agile as a business leader. So I don't allow myself to get too carried away. Clearly, I can see that you've enjoyed all the festive treats and celebrations, right? With that, of course, it's time to get down to business, literally. Our guest today is an alumnus of IIT Madras and I am Ahmedabad. Now, that's what I call an A-grade Indian education. He's currently co-chair of the CII's Urban Development and Smart Cities Council and serves on IGBC's executive board.
Yep, he's a customer insight specialist and someone whose work in strategy development has been appreciated as much as his know-how on real estate. In fact, he's the very first guest from the real estate sector on Minding My Business, the CEO story. Please welcome Managing Director and CEO of Mahindra Life Spaces, Arvind Subramanian. Hi, Arvind. How are you?
Hi, Rishi. Hi, Ramesh. Wonderful to be on the show.
Hi, Arvind. Great to have you on the show. Let's get into it straight away. You know, there's been a lot of press on how Mahindra World Cities in Chennai as well as Jaipur have shown great business resilience in the face of COVID-19. I want to congratulate you on that and start with having you talk about it. Essentially, for us to sort of understand the change in the real estate industry during COVID, there's a lot that's been spoken about it. And post-COVID, you know, is there a boom happening or What's your take on this?
Thank you, Ramesh. And look, I think Mahindra World City is a case in point about the role that real estate has been playing in our lives for many, many decades, but perhaps not noticed as strongly as it has been through this last 18 months of mayhem that we've gone through. Both your home as well as your workplace and, you know, the not just the physicality of it, but how it responds to you, how it responds to the community are very central to our lives. And through this period, we've had many customers coming back and telling us that they've had a kind of a moment of epiphany saying, actually, you know, this is what I really needed from my home or from my workplace. And that's of two kinds. In many cases, people have discovered hidden gems in these homes that they've been locked up in. In many cases, they've been frustrated with aspects that have been missing, but they didn't notice were missing until they came face to face with it. So I do think that, these past 18 months have led to two things. One, a much higher engagement with the category. Customers who were fence sitting about saying, you know, I want to buy my next home, but it may take me a few years. I'm in no rush. They are committing to that purchase. But also they've become far more discerning. They know what they want because of this 18 months of being cooped up at home 24/7 with family, stepping on each other's toes. And that's kind of thrown up new insight for them.
Nice one. Well, I have to add that your world cities in Tamil Nadu as well as Rajasthan are really great examples of public-private partnership, Arvind. So let's come to the next one. What does the new age home buyer in India really, really want? Let's spend some time on consumer demands and priorities, please.
Sure. So, look, as I was saying, I think this is a very fascinating category. It's a category that I've only recently started getting deep into. But if one were to look at fundamental consumer trends. For many years, homes, and let's, since homes are residential real estate, forms a bulk of the category, let's focus most of our conversation on that. Homes have been equated to other financial asset classes. And you have financial planners, I mean, some of them on your show I've heard as well, talking about, you know, what is your ROI on buying a home versus a mutual fund, and which is making more sense from a financial perspective, from a spreadsheet perspective. But I beg to differ. You know, I have yet to come across a family that speaks excitedly over dinner for many days on end after investing in a mutual fund that morning. This is a very, very emotive category. It is, to my mind, I would like to see it as a 30-year consumption product rather than an investment product. And if you start applying that lens, it opens up new doors, new insights, new avenues to what the consumer really wants. In most cases, the consumer is buying his home 3 or 4 years before he actually uses it. So he's already anticipating a certain need 4 years down the line. There are very few categories where the point of purchase and the point of consumption are 4 years apart. In that 4 years and the subsequent years that he lives in the home, he would go through life stage changes, his family would expand, his work would change, his children would grow up. So how do you make the home adaptable and capable to morph around all these life changes that the customer is going to go through? I think that's the question in front of us as a category. How do we stay relevant over 30 years to a consumer who's consuming the category?
So that's nice. I mean, the home is actually a consumer product. It's not an investment. You know, the world's been talking about digital transformation, how organizations are transforming digitally during this period. An interesting fact for all our listeners, in September 2020, in the midst of the first wave of India's pandemic, Mahindra Lifespaces was the first real estate company in India to enable a truly digitized end-to-end zero-touch launch of a residential product. Well done, Arvind, on that. You know, I really want to understand how the real estate sector, traditionally a laggard in technology adoption, is now at a point of inflection with reference to, you know, digitization and digital transformation.
You know, Ramesh, I'd like to talk about, yes, one aspect of technology transformation is certainly digital, and the example you shared was like a coming of age moment for us as a company, as well as for the industry overall. Homes and real estate has traditionally been a very high touch category. There's an embedded deep set way of how customers buy homes. They look at advertisements or look at digital kind of media. They down select, they go and visit a site, they want to see a show flat, they want to sit in front of a salesperson, look him in the eye. Do I trust this person to deliver my house on time and to quality? And then kind of sign on the dotted line in the booking form. And what COVID kind of threw up as an opportunity, I'd like to say, is can we think of a completely different way of selling this product? Many other categories have gone digital, have moved to e-commerce. Is real estate amenable to that, was the question facing us. And honestly, there's been many pieces of the puzzle that all of us have worked on. But this gave us an opportunity to stitch it all together and say, look, I'm going to reach out to you digitally. I'm going to get your lead in an inquiry form. On the inquiry form, you have an option to connect with a sales agent virtually. We set up a Zoom call or a Teams call to connect with you. We take you through a virtual tour of the project. You select your apartment, specific apartment online by looking at the inventory and what kind of views and things you would have from your apartment. You make your booking payment online as we enabled payment gateways. You sign your form digitally, authenticated through OTPs and Aadhaar, and take it all the way forward to actually registering your agreement for sale digitally. So we even had the advantage of working with the state government, the revenue department, Maharashtra, to enable digital registration, where we could take a laptop to the customer's house and it would just take literally 5 minutes for them to put their thumbprint, authenticate themselves through our office in the past. So that, you know, and it was very heartening to see the kind of adoption that happened. We were hesitant, to be honest, whether all of this could happen digitally, whether deep set behaviors could be changed. But I think what worked for us was this was a project, it was an affordable housing project in the Mumbai region, where many of the buyers were first-time home buyers. So they didn't have any baggage that they were bringing that, oh, this is the way houses are bought. This was the first time they were buying a home, and they said, okay, look, if I can buy you know, a bag or cosmetics or food online, why can't I buy a home online? And the fact that we were Mahindra gave it that trust and credibility that this is not some fly-by-night operator, I can trust them. It's coming from the house of Mahindra. Therefore, I don't need to second guess what I'm being told or what I'm being asked to do. So that's one aspect of it, which is the digital customer-facing part of it. But I think technology goes much deeper. We are trying to use now technology in our construction operations. We're using IoT. We're using sensors to check temperature of concrete as it sets. We're trying to use sensors to detect leakages before they actually occur. So there's a whole host of technology applications that will either speed up construction or improve quality of construction.
Arvind, real estate development has so many facets. I mean, there's commercial, special economic zones, industrial development, and of course, residential. And in that aspect, you have your finger in all of the pies. Let's have you talk us through new and emerging models in Indian real estate, please.
Now you're walking into a trap, Rishi. You're asking a former management consultant to talk about emerging business models. Now that's a six-hour conversation. But let me frame it in a classical consulting way, where think about two axes, right? The x-axis being customer touch points. Is it a one-touch engagement? Is it a multi-touch engagement? And the y-axis being, what is your proposition to the customer? Is it largely product-led or is it largely service-led? So if one would think of these two axes, the entire industry is moving from the bottom left of this chart to the top right. What I call the bottom left is the traditional build-to-sell kind of business models, which is what is the bread and butter business we all follow. So we build homes, we sell them, we say, thank you very much, here's your key, I hope you're happy with it. We'll see you 20 years later when you want to buy a bigger home. It moved then to what is known as somewhere in the middle of that chart to build to lease, where particularly in the B2B side of the business, commercial offices, et cetera, large offices, tenants were saying, I don't want to own this facility. I want to lease it. But fine, I will lease it. The rest of it, I will take care of. So I will do my fit outs. I will do my services, my housekeeping, my security, everything. But you give me a leased facility rather than a bought facility. What is now emerging is the top right, which is what I would call build to serve, where we talk, you know, you hear about things like co-working, co-living, many other such business models where it's entirely services led. The customer is saying, I will pay for what I need. Today, I may need something. Tomorrow, I may need something else. And you need to orchestrate a set of services, not all of which may come from your stable, but from other service providers, and bring it to me. I'm happy to pay a fee for that. Now, each of these, as this transition happens, requires very different capabilities. The economic models are different. The need for capital, both capital intensity as well as the kind of capital required, are very different. The value creation pathways are very different. So it's not easy to make these transitions. But the good news is many other industries have gone through these transitions. Like look at aircraft, look at or airlines, look at automotive. Many other categories have gone through a very similar transition. So there is a playbook. How to adapt that playbook to our industry is where there's a lot of learning we need to do.
Great. Don't remove your consultant hat just yet. You know, I have another question for you that will play to your consultant side of you. There's no doubt that in a lot of ways, cities like Mumbai are already congested. And, you know, urbanization, of course, involves redevelopment, finding innovative ways of making space for people. I'm sure you'll agree with me. I'd like to understand that story from you. How's urbanization taking shape in India? What's really happening on urbanization?
Yeah. So look, I think the first thing we must all acknowledge and kind of deeply realize is urbanization is inevitable and it's not a bad thing. As a country, we must encourage and accelerate urbanization. Now, urbanization does not need to be equal to creating these mega cities, which are, as you rightly mentioned, are extremely congested and are kind of falling apart because they just don't have the infrastructure to deal with it. So one could think of an urbanization model where there are multiple major cities rather than a few mega cities. Now, what will it require to do that? I think largely it's about employment. Why does urbanization happen? It happens for economic prospects. People move from tier two towns or villages to larger cities because they believe they can have better livelihoods. They can earn better. They have access to better jobs. Children have access to better education, etc. So until we solve the distribution of economic activity, it's going to be very hard to solve this clustering or congestion of urbanization that we are seeing. And that's kind of a very large policy and economic question that we are faced with.
You know, it is an acknowledged fact today, Arvind, that the planet is in crisis. And what was a murmur is becoming a very strong chorus of voices. Let's understand sustainable development and the concept of green homes. I believe you've even set up a center of excellence for research on green buildings. What are green homes really, Arvind, is my question to you.
Yeah, that's a great question, Rishi. And we've been we've been trying to simplify this. One of my colleagues asked me when I said, look, we're building green homes. He said, okay, explain this to my grandmother. What does it mean? And honestly, there's sustainability, green have taken on kind of this mega motherhood dimension. Almost everything gets swept under it. So I'd like to keep it simple. What we'd like to do is build products that are climate responsive. And I'll talk about each of these why. So climate responsive, which are low maintenance and which leave a low residue. Let me take you back to completely different story. When I first learned scuba diving, I love scuba diving. My instructor at the time, and this is now 25 years back, kept using this phrase saying, make your bubbles small. And I didn't understand the import of that. And he would say it almost casually, make your bubbles small. That is what, to me, sustainability is all about. It's about, one, don't disrupt things that are around you. Have a lower impact on your immediate environment. Two, the residue that you leave behind in doing what you do, try and minimize that. So what we've done, as we've been doing green building certification for many years now, but more recently, we've tried to make this more tangible to our consumer. In one of our recent new launches, we said the maintenance on your home is going to be half that of the peer group. Half that of the peer group. And we quantified this for them. We said, look, instead of 6 rupees a square foot, which everybody in this micro market charges, the maintenance estimate here is 3 rupees a square foot. What does that mean? Every rupee is about a lakh of saving in your capital cost. Because if you take it as an annuity, I'm going to be spending this year on year for 30 years, let's say. It's a lakh of saving in capital cost. Now, customers argue, wrestle, are combative about getting that 1 or 2% discount on the capital cost, but nobody really notices maintenance. Maintenance is a footnote on a price sheet when you buy real estate. So we took that footnote and made it into a headline, and it received tremendous response. After that project was launched, it was a very successful launch. We went back to customers and said, why did you buy? And low maintenance was one of the top 3 reasons why they bought. So that gave us a lot of confidence that there's a way to translate something which is a bit more abstract, a bit more distant, you can't really touch and feel it, into an actual consumer value proposition.
Great. I'm going to carry that inside with me. Make your bubble small. We talked about earlier about Mahindra World Cities, but I also want to know about Origins by Mahindra. Give us a lowdown on that, please.
So Mahindra World City was our first integrated city format where... Now, we started with Mahindra World City in Chennai, which is about a 1,500-acre development. At the time, was the first greenfield master planned city where you had both work, livelihood, actually 3 aspects, livelihood, living and life, as we call it. So we started with livelihood, created the special economic zones and the domestic tariff areas where companies would come and set up factories and offices. We added residential developments to it to give living. And then now we're doing life, which is all the social activities, retail, entertainment, etc. We did the same thing then, a similar format, but at a larger scale in Jaipur, which is about a 3,000-acre development in Mahindra World City, Jaipur. Now, as we go forward, we're also looking at a smaller format, which is just the industrial part of it, just the livelihood part of it, which we're calling Origins. So there is the larger integrated city format, which offers all these 3 pillars, livelihood, living and life, and Origins, which is just a livelihood aspect, where again, there is a space to create a plug-and-play infrastructure manufacturing destination, and where a lot of manufacturing investment can be channeled. You can create clusters. So that's what Origins is about.
So now, this is an oft-repeated question. You're probably a little tired of answering it, but I'm going to give it a bash for our exclusive radio and podcast audiences. Are people buying real estate only for actual use? And has it ceased to be an investment option over the last decade, Arvind, given that prices haven't gone up sharply since 2010? And in lots of cases, people say it's barely beating inflation.
Yeah, so I think that's true. And as I had mentioned earlier, I don't see this as a financial asset class. I see it as a 30-year consumption product, which happens to have a good resale value. Now, that resale value could be at or above your acquisition price. But, you buy a car and you say in 10 years, it's going to depreciate to 20% of the value or 10% of the value. Here, you're buying a house and you're saying over 30 years, it may retain its value, it may go up a little bit. And as long as you take your decision process with that lens, I think you're in a good space. What that means, therefore, is you have essentially 2 kinds of buyers. One is people who are buying it for their own use. They want to live there. But there are also buyers who are buying it for bequeathing it to the next generation. So as families get nuclearized, there's an aspect of a store of value. While you may not necessarily look at it as returns, there is a de-risking aspect to this, to saying, look, I believe that at least it won't diminish in value. It won't go to half or one third of the value. Therefore, you also see, because of this, a high correlation with stock market movement and real estate investment. So as people make gains in the stock market, they want to play safe by cashing out some of that profit and parking it in real estate, saying, okay, this is a safe haven. It's not going to diminish in value. So that's kind of the drivers of purchase today.
So just one more thing on the industry itself. The critical question is really, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about it. Have the number of new launches gone down over the last few years or in the last couple of years? And what's going on in the existing inventory? Is there still lots of unsold inventory in markets like NCR, Mumbai metropolitan region, and so on?
So if one were to take a 5 or 7 year picture, that's the first 3 or 4 years of that, that was certainly true. What's happened over the last year and a half is much of that unsold inventory has now started getting absorbed. You'll see an acceleration in new project launches. This is also to be viewed concurrently with a clear market consolidation in the supply side of this industry. The number of developers is drastically reducing. Market shares are gravitating towards the larger players in each of these markets. I was seeing some numbers for Bangalore where over a 10-year period, the top 5 players have gone from about a 10% market share to a 30% market share. And that's quite dramatic in the industry. So I think all of these will start making supply a lot more disciplined. It's not just, I have a piece of land, let me launch it. The fact that RERA has come in and commits you to certain timelines on delivery. So you need a certain surety that I will be able to sell this project, build it fully and deliver it to customers in that time.
You've actually answered my next question. I was going to segue into, you know, how I was going through some data that said because of the pandemic, 50% of developers, 50% in Mumbai, Delhi, and even the robust Bengaluru real estate market have withdrawn from business or tied up with large developers. So obviously lots of casualties there. You're not complaining. But, you know, just a quick throwaway and what that means to the average buyer. I know what it means to the large developer, the guy who's tying up with somebody like you. But for the average buyer, more accountability, would you say?
Certainly more accountability, hopefully better quality of product and better assurance about both quality and time of delivery.
I'm sure a lot of the casualties would be people who are earlier doing mid-income and low-cost housing, right? Looks like you've sharpened your focus on those two segments, Arun. Is the idea to get in and out of projects in 4 or 5 years max, or does that make more financial sense to you now?
Look, I think we are seeing two things with those segments. One, there's a lot of depth of demand. It's an underserved market and there is very robust and deep demand in those segments. And I'm talking about segments with ticket sizes of about 20 lakhs to 2.5 crores in cities like Mumbai and Pune. The second is, as you rightly said, we are very focused on the cash cycle of the business. As a developer, the biggest driver of returns is how quickly you can cycle your cash. So launch quickly, sell as much as possible, complete quickly, and move that into your next project. And to do that, these segments where there is robust demand, we're reasonably confident every time we launch, we can sell 40, 50, 60% of the inventory at launch. It sets you up very well on that runway to running that cash cycle efficient.
You know, Indian homes and families have also gone through a drastic change, haven't they, Arvind, during the pandemic? And even before, I saw it happening from a social perspective. I mean, people don't necessarily watch TV together in a living room because they all have different tastes. And each room in a nuclear family now needs to be self-contained, you know. Also, with the advent of work from home, you know, that also changes things up a lot. My question is from actually a design perspective. Is Mahindra Lifestyle acknowledging that change in mindsets, the upgradation of lifestyles at home? And is your design of residential units going to cater to that, or have you already started catering to that?
No, that's a wonderful point. And, you know, as I think back about the two-bedroom apartment I grew up in as a child and the two-bedroom apartments we now build and sell, they're largely similar. It may have shrunk for affordability reasons, but other than that, the layout, as you rightly said, the television taking pride of place in the living room with the sofa in front of it, the dining table taking the rest of the living room, these are all vestiges of the past. If I look at my family today and my kids, none of them sit in front of the TV to watch the television. We probably only a couple of times a week are at the dinner table together. Each of us has our own clock cycles in terms of when we wake up, when we move out. So space needs to be adapted to how lifestyles have changed, as you rightly pointed out. What we are like working on is, firstly, thinking of, historically, residential real estate has been about location, square feet, and a price per square foot. We are saying it's no longer square feet. Firstly, it is cubic feet. Because particularly in cities like Mumbai with compact homes, your vertical space, your wall space, and how that gets used is as important as your floor space. we're taking that one step further. It's not just about cubic feet. It is about cubic feet by hour of day, by occupant of the house. Because how I use a different space, in the morning, I like to have my coffee in the balcony or by the window. In the evening, I'm sitting at the couch or on the bed. So every person engages with different pockets of their house at different times of the day differently. So how do we make design more ethnographically oriented and kind of responsive to this changing pattern of life? We're starting to break through some very interesting design concepts where the same shell of the house can be, you know, you can have movable walls or adaptable walls, you can change them over time. And the same shell can be a studio apartment, it can be a one bedroom, it can be a one bedroom with a helps room, but the entire external frame potential buyer.
Brilliant. Now to the fun part. Some lifestyle questions now before we wrap up.
I thought that was the fun part.
Yeah. So what kind of music do you listen to and what's on your playlist? Also, any music concert? IIT Madras, I know, was big on music and so on. So also any music concerts that you went to during your student days or now recently before the pandemic, Indian, international, anything?
Yeah, sure. So my interests in music are as wide as my ability in music is shallow. So I listen to everything from Farida Khanum, Mehdi Hassan, Ghulam Ali to the more, growing up in an IIT hostel, you can't disavow Pink Floyd, CCR, and, you know, more recent influences. And you talked about recent concerts. The Mahindra Blues Festival last year was my first engagement with blues. And I really took to it after that. Buddy Guy, Keb Mo. I remember seeing you there, Rishi, at the Mahindra Pavilion at the back. It's kind of very varied interest. I would say what connects all of it is melody and lyrics. Kind of, I index more on those than the other stuff.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and that's like a mecca for all of us Mumbaikers. You're right. I'm a regular there, and Anand keeps saying how, you know, blues music and tractors are so important to the Mississippi Belt, and Mahindra was in tractors, and Mahindra now is in the blues. So that's really wonderful. A book that has left an impact on you, Arvind.
So let me pick actually three books in the same genre. There's a book called The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch, and two other books in the same genre, Atul Gawande's Being Mortal and Paul Kalanidhi's When Breath Becomes Air. Now, one might think of these as morbid topics, you know, mortality, end of life, legacy, and, you know, why is somebody in his prime of his youth reading these kinds of books? But I found them strangely uplifting. I think it really makes you think very deeply about what you're prioritizing, what really gives you joy, and what matters at the end. And for me, it was a deeply moving experience reading these three books. I read them over a period of time, but they sit together very nicely. But I also read a lot of fiction, you know, Amitav Ghosh, his Ibis trilogy, Tolkien and Lord of the Rings, Rushdie, all my favorites. List for the next holidays is going to be my son's Merchant of Venice. I want to go back to Shakespeare, which I studied back in school. He's now at that same age. So I'm pinching that over a weekend and finishing it.
Oh, cricket's been the flavor of the season, but you know, what's a sport you follow and your favorite player in that sport?
Yeah, so cricket, certainly. I mean, every Indian worth his salt has to follow cricket. So yes, I do watch cricket quite a bit. I think in cricket, I look up to players like Dravid and Kumble, and, you know, just the resilience, the aggression. I read a quote recently, I think it was Hayden or someone, who said, if you want to see aggression, look in Rahul Dravid's eyes. You know, there's something about kind of that character that and what he represents that really is striking. But, you know, personally, I swim. I've been kind of a competitive swimmer in my student days. I took up water polo as a sport, something that's, you know, very few people play. And perhaps that's why I took it up, given I don't have an athletic physique. I chose sports that had less competition in them. But I love long distance swimming. I can swim for hours. I can swim longer than I can run.
Wow. Your favorite vacation spot and why you love going there. You've already piqued our curiosity by talking about scuba diving in bubbles. So tell all.
So I like the hills and I like the deep seas. So on an average, I'm a very grounded guy. In the hills, I mean, my most memorable vacations have been spontaneous backpacking vacations. I did a trip to Sikkim, again, about 25 years back, where a friend and I, both of us, were kind of leaving our first jobs and moving in to do our MBAs. And we said, literally, you know, let's pick our bags and go. And we got onto a bus. Wherever the bus would stop, we'd look around and say, if we like this place, we'll stay. Otherwise, we'll take the next bus out of that. And this was East Sikkim, not Gangtok. A wonderful, wonderful experience. I remember that early morning sight of the Kanchenjunga from Pelling. It is just so stupendous. I've never seen anything like that. I then did another backpacking trip in Scotland, again in the Highlands. Similar idea there. I was doing it solo. I was the oldest backpacker on those buses, but it was also around the time I was reading Tolkien. So while I hadn't made the connection before deciding to go to Scotland, of course, there's a very intrinsic connection in the scenery and the locale and the premise of the book.
A business leader you find inspirational, and why?
Look, I started my career with the Tata Group in the Tata Administrative Service, and Mr. Ratan Tata, to me, kind of epitomizes and symbolizes a lot of what is good about business leadership. How he dealt with the whole kind of structure that he inherited from G.R.D. Tata with the multiple satraps and the legacy he's left as he's moved on from an active chairman role and everything in between. The values he stood for, the dignity, the stature he has in the community. I think all of those I certainly look up to. And then, you know, I've been fortunate over the last few years to work and interact with Anand, who again brings many of those values and kind of behaviors, but also adds a dimension of innate curiosity. He's just so curious about everything that's going on, and an eloquence that I hope I learn from and kind of embody in the years to come.
Lovely. Well, Arvind, I have to say this, you will always be special to us, being the first ever CEO from the real estate sector on the show. And might I add, you really added a lot of value today with your practical insights on a sector that India is pretty much obsessed with.
That's right. You know, I absolutely agree, Rishi. Arvind, a big heartfelt thanks from the two of us and all our ardent listeners for featuring on this episode of Minding My Business, the CEO story.
Thank you, Rishi. Thank you, Ramesh. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Lovely. Thank so, you, Ramesh, thanks. A man who's spearheading the revival of the real estate business in this country, Arvind is what I'd call, quoting a famous Hollywood film. I don't know if you've seen the Nicholson Cruz film, A Few Good Men.
I wish there were a few more.
Yes, absolutely, Rishi. A robust, active real estate sector is absolutely essential for our economy to turn the corner, just like we've turned another corner on this show with the end of this episode.
Nice one. Remember, about turning a corner.
The other thing that we need to remember is to reduce our bubbles.
Yes, correct. Thanks for tuning in, guys. And make sure you keep listening to some great radio and podcasts. Please build that habit, yeah?
Right. And come back next week for another super episode.
Yes, Minding My Business, the CEO story, shall be back with another captain of the industry who's been a pathbreaker. Remember, you can catch us on 94.3 Radio 1 on FM radio and HD Smartcast in podcast form over all major streaming services and platforms. This is a Radio 1 production. So till next week, it's bye from me, Rishi K.
And me, Ramesh Men.
This was a Radio 1 production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.